Are you tired of feeling burned out? I know I used to feel burned out all the time. And then I discovered some tips, tools, and strategies to go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I will be sharing them on this show, as well as interviewing experts that are going to help you transform from exhausted to energized and stressed out to serene. If you're ready to break free from the burnout for good, let's jump into the show. Welcome, Jeff Canals, to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show.
Rebecca, thanks so much for having me. It's so good to see you.
It is so good to have you here. This is my first StreamYard broadcast, and to have someone like you, a world-class entrepreneur with so many different successful companies, it's just such a special interview in so many ways and on so many levels. And I just cannot wait to tell my audience about your amazing background. I first met Jeff about 2 months ago at a VIP mastermind dinner with David Meltzer. And Jeff was on a panel of successful entrepreneurs, and the wisdom that he was sharing and the energy with which he shared his knowledge on business inspired me so much that I knew I just had to have you on the show. So welcome, welcome, welcome. And I'm going to tell my audience about your wonderful, illustrious background. Jeff is a serial entrepreneur and an angel investor. He was the CEO and co-founder of Hive, a full-service digital marketing agency. And Hive was rated the 52nd fastest growing company in the US by Inc. magazine. He scaled Hive to 8 figures and sold it to an independently owned ad agency. So he had a major exit. Jeff has been featured in so many magazines, Entrepreneur, Adweek, Inc., Fortune. He's been on multiple news TV networks. He is a partner and investor in 13 businesses, ranging from medical research, professional networking, mobile payment apps, real estate, and 3 restaurants. Jeff serves on the board of directors of a financial financial company called Co-Community Financial System, worth $15 billion with a B. But not only does he love to invest in companies, he loves making a positive difference in the world. And he sits on the board of several very well-known charities. And he started his own incredible charity called the Canals Family Foundation, which helps children to break generational poverty through educating them on health, education, and career paths. So, Jeff, how did you get to be this multi-passionate entrepreneur? Tell us a little bit about your origin story and how you started and what happened. Like, you're just such a prolific entrepreneur. I'm sure you didn't start that way.
Certainly did not, Rebecca. And first of all, I'm honored to be your first on StreamYard. This is very exciting. So thanks for inviting me and making this all happen. It was so lovely to meet you at the David Meltzer event. I was adopted at 3 months old from a not so great situation in South Korea. And was very fortunate to be adopted by 2 loving parents here in upstate New York. Both of them had to borrow from a lot of people, a lot of organizations to adopt me. It's not as expensive as it is today to adopt, but it was pretty expensive back then. And neither one of them, you know, both of them had their GEDs. Neither of them were really more focused on their career and things like that. You know, my dad was a highway department guy, plowed snow in the winter, tarred roads in the summer. And my mom had different jobs, although she did go back and get her degree in her late 40s, which was really inspiring to watch as a young kid. But they adopted me, and I grew up in a very rural farming community. There was no entrepreneurism anywhere. I didn't know anybody's, you know, no friends of mine had businesses. It just wasn't a thing where I grew up. And so the world of owning your own business felt very foreign to me all the way up until, you know, many years into my career. I started in broadcast television.
What did you do on broadcast television? Were you on air or behind the camera, or what did you do?
Yeah, I was in advertising. So I would be the advertising sales executive that would sell the airtime for local TV stations. I worked for an ABC and CW affiliate when I first started. And then when I was 26, I got a job as a manager managing NBC, CBS, and CW affiliate in Syracuse, New York. And so I had a team of ad sales execs. And as much as I love television, I realized that I really wanted to get in the digital marketing space. But in order to do that, I would have needed to take a step back in my career, because going from an advertising TV advertising sales manager to a digital sales manager was a step back. And so really, the only way forward that I found to not have to take a big step back was to take a step forward into entrepreneurship. So I started a company, Digital Hive, the agency you referenced, and we grew up pretty quickly.
So you started Digital Hive, and when you started it, Jeff, did you just have a feeling that this was going to be your ticket to financial freedom? Did you just not even think that far ahead? You just knew that you wanted to like get out of the networks and do your own thing? Like, what were your intuitions or feelings when you started this, the company Hive?
Well, what's interesting is that at the time, I actually liked being in the corporate world. I didn't know any better. And starting a business seemed very foreign and scary. In fact, at the time, my son was, I had my first kid with my wife. My wife is from Finland. And in Finland, they have 3 years of maternity leave there.
Oh, so, wow.
That's 3 paid years of maternity leave.
Amazing.
And so I told her that when we first got married, because she moved from Finland to be with me in New York, I told her, if we ever have kids, you can have the same kind of thing, because I was doing well on TV, you know, I made enough money that she could stay home. So she was staying home. We had our first child. He was 3 months old. And I told her, hey, I'm going to start this business and we're not going to make any money for 12 months. Are you okay with that? And to her credit, she was like, if you think this is the best thing for our family, go for it. And I think in terms of feeling, I just knew that we were it was 2014 in the area we were, the market opportunity was so great because businesses knew they needed digital and social media marketing, but they didn't know who to turn to. And I was fortunate to have found my business partner who was incredibly skilled at running ads, doing SEO, building websites. So he had this very unique skill of doing the execution. And I had all the contacts from being in ad sales for so long. I knew all the marketing directors and people making the advertising decisions for the companies, that it was a perfect marriage of partnership where he did one, his kind of role, I did my role, and together we knew we could really build something special. And so in that first year, it was that typical startup grind. It was, you know, make no money, ramen noodles every night. It wasn't until after just the first year, we hired our first employee, started to make a little money, but it all went back into the company, reinvesting. And then we grew pretty significantly after that. I would say starting in the third year, the first year we did about $105,000 annual revenue. The next year we did 850. The next year we did 3.2 million, 5.6, 7.2, 12, and then $15.5 million over the next 6 to 7 years. So it was quite the journey.
Now, when you started it, were you planning to do an exit and sell it for millions of dollars, or did you not even know where it would lead?
We had known, both my partner and I had known from day one that we wanted to do other things with our life. Mm-hmm. So we had kind of built the business with an exit in mind. We knew basically from day one that we wanted to have some kind of exit. And one of a personal reason was because my parents hated their jobs. They taught me that work was the enemy and I should run as fast away as possible from work as quickly as I could. And so my goal was to work really hard when I was young. And by the time I was 35, I had this number, it was totally arbitrary, but I had this number of 35 in my head. By the time I'm 35, I want to have enough money that I can retire and not do anything. And I happened that when I was 35, I sold the company and I had a great exit and was able to retire. But very quickly, I realized that work is not my enemy. I actually love building. Where I find fulfillment, where I find purpose is taking, you know, challenges or problems in the world and building something from nothing and creating solutions to those problems. And that's what I uniquely get excited about. It's what I'm uniquely able to just connect the dots with, and building great teams. You know, all those things kind of coalesce to say, you know, I had the exit. I was like, what am I going to do next? And I ended up probably pendulum too far. I swung a little bit too far and I made all these new things, but it's been very rewarding and a lot of fun.
So what shifted in you, like mentally, spiritually, physically, when you had that windfall of cash? Did you feel like a different person? Did you feel more freedom? Did you feel like pressure? Like, did you like, I don't want to mess this up. Like, what was the shift in you, if any, after you made that huge exit?
You know, it's such a good question because I think there's a lot of assumptions around what you think you'll feel.
Right.
You look at your bank account and you're like, that's more money than I ever thought I'd have in my entire life.
Right.
That moment happened for me after I sold the business. And I think what's interesting, Rebecca, is all the feelings you described, I had them all at once. Mm-hmm. I had joy, elation, I had fear, anxiety. I had all the things that you mentioned because it's not just, you know, this, you climb the mountain and you get to the top and you put the flag in and you feel this enormous amount of success. You know, and my business coach actually warned me of this beforehand, so I was prepared for it. But there's also this, you work so hard to get to this, you know, arbitrary number. And she describes, she's helped me understand the hedonistic treadmill that we're all on, where, you know, you, and I'm sure that you and probably most of your viewers can relate. You set a goal for yourself. I'll give you an example, a real example. For Digital Hive, it was when we make $1 million in revenue, top line gross revenue a year, that's when we've really made it. Mm-hmm. When we hit that $1 million number, it felt so shallow. It felt like that's all we tried to do. Oh my gosh, like this is nothing. Like we did $83,333. That's a run rate of $1 million a year, MRR. And it felt like so hollow. And we're like, we need to do so much more than this. We have so much more to go. It's the same thing in your personal finance. You think, and you're, when I was a kid, I thought making six figures, if I make $100,000, oh my gosh, I'll never have to think about money again. If I'm making six figures every year, I'm going to live high, all that. And then when I started making six figures, and I was fortunate that I made six figures pretty early in life, I was like, man, this barely covers my bills because your level of living, your expectations of what life becomes continually goes up. And so that's a real trap. And when you set an idea of like, when I get $3 million, $5 million, $10 million in your bank account, if you get $10 million in your bank account, I guarantee you're going to be like, well, I really need 20 to feel comfortable. It's this odd thing of just the goalpost continues to move back. And so, you know, it's about, you go into kind of protection mode. You go into, oh my gosh, like, how is this going to last? What kind of life can I live? Is it enough? Right. But it's also like, yeah, I hit this mountain. So I would say very honestly that not a lot practically changed in my day-to-day life because I continued to work. I continued to build things. And now it's really just, it sits and it's growing and I'm just continue to create value for the world and for the foundation and all the things that I want to do in my life. So money is a tool in which that can buy you time. It can buy you freedoms. It can buy you certain levels of happiness when you get to a certain point, but it is not the end all solution. I guarantee every single person that.
So what routines as far as health and wellness have you been able to incorporate because you do have the time and money freedom. And I'm sure, you know, you want to be healthy and active with your 7 and 10 year old kids and also not get stressed out while you're, you know, running 13 companies. So what kind of health and wellness routines or practices have you been employing?
Yeah, such a great question. So I had to start taking my health seriously because in 2020, COVID hits, obviously, and I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that I had no idea was inside of me.
Which one?
It's called pemphigus vulgaris, which is a very rare autoimmune disease.
Yeah,
it relates to skin and some other things. And, you know, I get blisters and stuff. Wow. And thankfully, you know, if this was the 1950s, it had a 95% fatality rate.
Wow.
And now today, because of new technologies, it's incurable, but it's very manageable. You know, the effects, is knock on wood today, are, I'm technically in remission at the moment because I was able to get some infusions and some other things that help manage it. But it was a real wake-up call, and it was driven from stress, Rebecca. Like, that's how I had it in my body always, but it activated because I was extremely stressed. The business was stressed because COVID, you know, all of our clients, malls, banks, car dealerships, you know, whatever, they all shut down, which meant that our revenue dropped 70% in the month of April from what it was previous to COVID. So, and I had 56 employees that I had to take care of. And so it was a very stressful time, like it was for everyone, but that activated my stress level. And, on top of that, I was probably overweight for my height and body stature. And, you know, because I was working so hard and so much, I wasn't prioritizing my health. And so all of those things coalesced into getting much more serious about my health. For the last, I'd say 3 years, I've done intermittent fasting. That has been wonderful for my body. And to be honest, I don't know enough about, you know, frankly, all of the health benefits and things like that. I've just decided for myself what works. And I've tried some different things. For me, intermittent fasting has been incredible because.
So what is your schedule with that? Like, what is your feeding window and your fasting window?
I do the 16-8. So I stop eating at 8 o'clock at night and I start eating again at noon.
Okay.
So then I eat from noon until 8 p.m. The thing that I really love about it is that, the reason that I gained so much weight is because I work all night. I unfortunately or fortunately, since I was a kid, I only get about 3 or 4 hours sleep a night. It's just a thing that's happened for a long time. And so I work all night long. I'll work literally from like 11 until 2 o'clock in the morning. I work out every day after 2 o'clock. I do some cardio, I do some lifting and things like that. But every day, 7 days a week, I work out, but it's late at night and I work late at night. And so what used to happen was I'd be on the couch, I'd be working and I'd have a bag of chips next to me or I'd have some kind of snacks or candy. And I wasn't hungry. I was just had the habit of taking my hand and putting something in my mouth as I worked. And so the intermittent fasting was a way for me to break that habit. And it fortunately, it really, it's worked very well for my body. And, so that between that and working out every day has been a huge benefit to my overall health for sure.
Are you tired of endless diets and frustrating results? I know I was, and I didn't want to count calories, count macros, and I definitely didn't want to jab myself in the stomach with a needle to get the benefits of GLP-1. I'm so grateful I discovered the Body Transformation System. I have been on this easy-to-follow supplement program for a month, and I cannot even believe it. I went from 25% to 17% body fat. I haven't been under 20% body fat in my entire adult life. What I love about this system is it's all natural. It helps you regulate appetite, boost your metabolism, and burn fat. No chemicals, no needles, no harsh stimulants, no side effects, just results. All you have to do is go to the show notes to grab your sample. I can't wait for you to get the same results that I'm getting. And let's get lean and strong together. See you back in the show.
That's great. And I know you're doing intermittent fasting 8 and 12. Are you also doing like high protein, low carb? Are you doing like the bulletproof coffee with the fat in the coffee, like anything else you want to share about your diet?
You know, as much as I would love to be able to get into macros and all those things, I have so many friends that are big into, you know, their diets and how they eat and what they regulate. For me, it's about caloric intake. What I realized for me, I am a, like most people, a very habit-driven person. And if I can't do something 7 days a week, I won't do it. So I've done everything from the old beach body workouts, Insanity, P90X, all that stuff. I've gone through phases of working out really hard. But the challenge is that if it's not something that I can keep up 365 days a year, I will stop at some point and I won't restart at some point. You know, I'll get sick and then I'll break the routine and then I don't do it again. I take a week off. So I have to build in for me almost simple things that make sense in my brain that allow me to stick with it 7 days a week and it just become part of my lifestyle. So it's not, I'm not a dieter. The intermittent fasting thing is not a diet. My exercise is not a thing that I'm doing to lose a bunch of weight before a vacation. It's just part of my lifestyle. And if I can build it into my habitual day to day, that's what's worked for me. So all I really think about is caloric intake. And that's why intermittent fasting is so great, because when you limit the amount of hours you're eating, naturally your caloric intake goes down. And so I'm a little bit more, I try not to eat terrible foods of what we know is terrible. I try to be cognizant of, good natural. I'm very lucky that my wife cares about these things more. So she buys food that, is more healthy to eat. But ultimately, for me, it's the intermittent fasting, it's working out, caloric intake, make it simple, and that's what I do.
That is great. So let's go back to your success path, because you are one of the most successful people I've interviewed on this show, and I've interviewed over 200. And was there a moment in your life that you knew you'd be successful, or did it really take you by surprise? I mean, I know you said you wanted to reach a certain level by age 35, but was there this is what I have to do? I've got to be wealthy by age 35, or was it just oh my God, this Hive thing could really be huge, and I'm going to really just hit the pedal to the metal and then exit when I'm 35. What was that success journey like for you? Because it is very, 1% of 1% level of success. So what was that defining moment in your life when you decided I am going to be extremely successful?
First of all, thank you. It's very kind of you. And I would say, honestly and candidly, I knew in myself that I wanted very much to break the cycle of, this generational low income household living, right? I wanted for my children to live a very different life than I had, and that especially my parents had, because my parents had a pretty rough childhood. And I knew what my coaches kind of taught me is that my motivation up until the point that I sold my company was one of fear-based. I was always running away from what we've identified as the poverty monster.
Okay.
And so for me, it was less about finding success and more about escaping this poverty cycle of not having enough, not knowing if we can afford, water that month or whatever the thing. We had a well and we had to go and buy water from this thing. So we had to take quick charge. There's all these things that I didn't want for my children. And I knew in order to get there, I would need to work extremely hard to do it. And so it wasn't so much about being successful or it was about escaping something. And it served me. What I've realized since then is that it's so much more fulfilling. It's so much more rewarding. Instead of your motivation being this fear-based running away from something, is running towards something.
Ooh, that's the tweetable. If you guys are listening to this, taking notes, don't run away from fear. Run towards your vision, your big, scary, motivating, inspiring vision of what you're creating in your life. And it's different for everyone.
You got it. You nailed it. And the reason that that's so impactful is because when you're running away from something, you get exhausted. You get burnt out. You're like, this is ridiculous. I can't keep up at this pace. But when you're running towards something, when you see the vision, when you're excited about it, when you can't wait to get there, you're running faster and you get less winded because you're so excited. The energy level that you're bringing to that quest, to that journey, is completely different than when you're running based on fear. And so that's been the kind of pivot that I've made in my life of finding things that are fulfilling, finding things that are going to aid me in my journey to the vision that I have for my overall life. And it's just so much more rewarding and so much less draining than what it was when I was running away from my poverty monster.
Well, that's perfect that you bring that up, because actually the theme of the show is taking you from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. So when you're running from something scary, fear-based thinking, that can really burn you out, because it gets exhausting to try to outrun your own fears, which are always at some level present. versus running toward your vision. So I know you mentioned that you have coaches and you've, you know, what role has business coaching and personal growth development played in you becoming the Jeff Canals you are today?
I would say that the best investments I've made in my life has been towards coaching. And I think that and coaching and community, finding like-minded people that are going through similar challenges, finding similar opportunities, running as fast as I am towards goals, that's super motivating and keeps me excited about the journey that I'm on. Coaching is just something that has been so incredibly impactful in my life. I've had, I think, 5 different business coaches throughout my life, and they've all came at exactly the right time and the right moment of my life. One of our first business coaches was much more tactical and helped us think about how to be better leaders and how to create structures and processes and a brand that allowed us to be the best we could be at Digital Hive. My current business coach, who I've worked with, I think, for 5 years now, she has absolutely changed my life in the most positive way. She's based out of Australia, venture capitalist, a Harvard graduated lawyer, understands psychology, human emotion, just one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. And I will say that the thing she really does for me, her name is Maxine Minter, the thing she does for me is she never gives me an answer, as frustrating it is, because I can tell when I share a challenge I'm having or emotion that I'm feeling, she knows me so well, she's able to kind of jump ahead and knows what I need in that moment. She could just tell me, but what a really great coach does is guide you through a process to find it yourself.
Right.
And uncover that answer for you that you say, wow, the self-discovery of this is what I actually need. This is the direction I need to move. And, you know, I heard a great quote about how some people, they feel like, you know, oh, I don't need a coach. I'm successful or I'm doing well. Well, every athlete, the best athletes in the world that have ever lived have all had coaches. Michael Jordan had a coach. Kobe had a coach. LeBron has a coach. You know, every single great athlete has a coach because you need that third party to evaluate how you're doing, that understands you well enough to give you the tips to get on the right path. And I couldn't be a bigger advocate for having someone in your corner like that.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And if you're listening, he said the best investment, and he's an angel investor and has owned many, many companies, is in his own coaching and personal development. And I like to tell people, if you're not going to bet on yourself, who's going to bet on you? Like, if you're not going to invest in your own betterment and personal growth, who is going to invest in you? So that is perfect, what you said. Now, I know we met through our mutual friend, David Meltzer, who's also a brilliant business coach. How did you meet him?
So David, how did I meet David? I met David through a number of friends that were working with him through his coaching program or knew him in a bunch of different ways. And, you know, the second best investment that I mentioned is community. And There's nobody better in the world than David Meltzer in building community, right? He just knows everyone. He's incredible at building real relationships and providing value to those relationships. I love him so much. And so We were introduced by a few mutual friends, and I've been told for many years, hey, you got to meet this guy. And the moment that I did, you know, like he does with so many, I'm sure, we just clicked. And I brought him in to speak to my mastermind group. I've been a part of his coaching program. I spoke at a number of his, you know, dinners, and we've done some great work together. So he's a great friend, a great mentor, a great advocate, and I feel very lucky to have him in my life, for sure.
That's great. He's been on this podcast too, and I was on his. So, and he's doing some great business deals with my husband, Ben Press. So we all are connected, awesome. Which is awesome. Couple more questions. So what are your time management systems for work-life balance? Because you do have 2 young kids. You're involved in 13 companies, you do coaching, community, masterminds, travel, all the stuff. Like, do you have any time management hacks or systems in place that make your life work without causing you stress?
I will say that I don't know how anyone can be at a level of any kind of real success without understanding how to manage their time properly. I think that if there was one thing that every person that wants to reach any level of success should do is learn how to manage their time, how to create time for themselves. My philosophy on it is that, you know, time management, you build a life by how you spend your time. And how you spend your time is a choice. I think so often I hear every single day by everyone I encounter, oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time for that. And the reality is you do have time for that. Everyone has time for everything. It's about the choice you make with that time. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's probably the thing I'm most strict about is I have a very specific rubric around how I spend my time. I have things that are priorities in my life. And I always said that the reason, as I referenced earlier, the reason I want to become successful, to have wealth, to do all the things I'm working so hard to do is so that I can pass along not only the money and investments and all those things to my future generations and my community through the Knaus Foundation, but it's also the wisdom of learning how to manage that time because everyone needs that skill. And so my major philosophy is I don't call it the work-life balance, it's work-life harmony because you're never going to be 50-50.
Right.
It's going to be 50% work, 50% family,
right.
Never that. Sometimes, a lot of times, it's 100% work, 0% family, 100% family, 0% work. And so, but I will say that my number one priority always, like if my kid's school calls right now and there's something wrong, I'm going to have to leave the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, I make it clear to everyone, my employees, my clients, everything, that my family will always come first. I'm not going to be the dad that, you know, sacrificed building real relationships and teaching my children, you know, as much as I can for having a bunch of money. It's just never been worth that trade for me. And so I've been very fortunate in the businesses that I built. I think that's the first thing is you're really conscious about the businesses that you build and the investment of time that you're going to have to put into those businesses to ensure that it's not something that's going to completely take away from, you know, you spending time with your kids, if that's your priority. Some people, that's not their priority. No judgment. It's just not their priority. I know people that are much more prioritized on building their career than being great parents, you know, because they have a partner that is more supportive on that side. So it's about understanding what your real priorities are in life. And on top of all the things we just talked about, I also coach my son's soccer team. I coach my daughter's soccer team. I coach my son's indoor soccer team. I go to every game, practice, rehearsal, everything. Anything they do, you do, because I am 100% cognizant that that time is that big. And we only live one time. And if I'm doing all this because I love being a dad, which I do, this very small time in my life that I'm going to get the opportunity to do it, I'm going to do it, which means I sacrifice a lot of other things to do it, but it's worth the sacrifice because it's my number one priority.
So how do you block out these 13 businesses? Like, how do you organize your calendar? Do you use a calendar? Do you use like a productivity app? Like, how are you, you know, budgeting your time?
Yeah. So for me, it's a rubric that you know, I see every it's a weekly thing. Every week and every kind of 2 weeks, I kind of plan ahead of, you know, what my calendar looks like, what time I have allotted for different things. I use my rubric to make decisions on, you know, if my kids have soccer games or practices that I'm coaching at, those come first. And by the way, again, there's always sacrifices to make. So, you know, through this last, we just wrapped up our last game. I probably missed 3 practices out of the season, but I missed 0 games because I made a choice that, you know, that networking event or that work thing that I had to do had to take priority over going to that practice. And that's okay, right? But it's about prioritization. I have different calendars for every major thing that I do. So I have, you know, for any company that I really am in the day-to-day of the leadership and running day-to-day operations, I have separate calendars for those. And then I have a catch-all work calendar. And then I have a family calendar. And they're all organized by color and all those things. But I live by my calendar. If it's not on my calendar, it ain't happening. Like, I don't care how many times you tell me or text me or remind me. If it's not there, I'm not doing it. So I make a priority to ensure that everything is on my calendar. It's very visible for everybody that needs it. my employees. I have a really wonderful chief of staff that helps me with, you know, all this, these different balls in the air. And I'm just really strict on it. And I think that that's always been the case because I value time so much. I'm almost, I would say 99% of the time, I'm never late to anything. I'm always early to things. I respect other people's time very much. And so I always want to be kind of on schedule with the things that I'm doing. It's the, that's the kind of system that I've worked out.
And do you use just like Apple iPhone for these different calendars? Or is there like Asana or productivity app that you like to use? Like, how do you organize all these different calendars?
So it's all Google Cal because I use Google Workspace for all my different businesses. Monday.com is our project management system that we use for most of the businesses, so across businesses. And then my chief of staff does a really good job of creating processes that she knows. I would highly advise most people, even if, you know, you don't need to be a CEO, you don't even need to be a high-level executive. Every single person could use a virtual assistant. They're getting way more affordable. And that's my chief of staff started as a virtual assistant. I hired as a virtual assistant. And then she became so invaluable to me. She became my director of ops, my chief of staff. And so a VA, typically you only pay them by hour. It's how I started with, her name is Haley, who's incredible. And if you teach them and give them the guidelines, if somebody reaches out to you for my time, this is how to evaluate that time. And here's where you can make easy decisions for me. And here's where you ask me if, you know, so it's really a if then kind of situation. If this happens, then you do this. And that's the way I do it. I don't like to use Calendly or any kind of scheduling tools because I feel like it puts the onus. If I'm asking you for an appointment, but you have to go and do the work to find the time, I don't love that. So I like to create convenience for people that I'm working with. And I'll just tag in my chief of staff or my VA to say, hey, can you help us find time? And then that way it's a little bit easier than you having to go into a software to pick your time and find all the things. And so there's different nuances that I just have a preference on with communication, convenience. But we have systems, you know, in place to make sure that everything is, all my time is created according to my priorities in life.
And how far out in advance do you plan your vacations and your downtime?
With as much advance notice as I can. You know, like any major vacation, like next year, we probably for the last 5 months, we've had, where are we going? St. Kitts and Nevis Island. We're going there in February. So I like to just get ahead of that. But like, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was like, hey, let's go down to Charleston for a quick family vacation. I love to travel. My wife loves to travel. My kids love to travel. And because my wife is from Finland, we travel to Finland every year as well. And so that's typically booked out quite far. And because that's so important to us as a family, that gets priority. So that's why I like to do it early, because once that's locked in, you can't have that time, right? Yeah. Like, it's locked in. I booked the trip. The flights are in. So if you want to do something, that time is already set. That's why I like to do it way, way in advance.
And how did you meet your wife?
We were both studying abroad in Nice, France. It was a lovely time. We were both there for about 5 months. She was studying abroad from Finland. It was a very culturally diverse program. There were people from Korea and Mexico and Spain and all these places. And she's from Finland. And I was visiting from New York. And we were friends for the first 4 months. In the last month, we kind of started dating. But we were like, oh, well, semester ends. We both go home. We're like, well, that was fun. But at the same time, like, you live in Finland, I live here. She came to visit me after the semester was over. It was our senior year. School's done. She visits me for 2 weeks. We're like, oh, that was kind of fun. Let's, you know, maybe we could try this. So for 3 years, she would visit me for 3 months, leave for 3 months, visit me for 3 months, go back and work. Cause I made no money. My parents didn't have any money. My first job out of school, I made $21,000 the first year and $23,000 the second year of, you know, out of school. And so we had nothing. And so she would work enough to afford a plane ticket to, you know, for 3 months. And then fly back on her dime to come see me for 3 months. I would pay for the bills while we were there. We lived in a studio apartment. And then she'd fly back, make some more money and come back. And after 3 years, we're like, all right, let's just do this thing. Let's get married. So we're going on year 15 now.
That's got to be just so endearing and like help your love like be so deep and juicy that she was, you know, willing to, you know, spend her own money to see you, and that she wasn't with you when you had, you know, millions of dollars, that she just fell in love with you for you.
Yeah, that's one thing I feel very grateful for, is that we met each other under the pretense of two people that fell in love and that adore one another. She's my best friend. And I will say that she's been able to be my biggest supporter throughout all of this. And she deserves just as much, if not more, credit for all of the things that we've done together. This isn't the Jeff Show. This is really our family, and all the things she's had to sacrifice in order for us to get where we are. And so I'm very thankful to have a partner in life that has gotten, you know, that has given me so much support to get to where we are today.
Well, that's wonderful. So last couple of questions. What advice or encouragement could you give a struggling young entrepreneur that's just, they're new at their business and they're not making a profit yet and they're just putting it all on the line? What would you tell them?
One more day. One more day. When you feel at your lowest, when you're like, this, what have I done? Because every entrepreneur goes through days where you're like, this was the best. I'm so excited. There's so much opportunity. And then literally the next day is like, what did I do? Why did I make this decision? I put my family at risk. I risked it all and it's never going to work. I'm never going to get there. Give it one more day. Just because the next day could look completely different, probably will look completely different than the moment that you're sitting in. And everything has a season. There's a season of success. There's a season of learning. There's a season of failure. And every part of it is valuable. Every part of it. And it never feels that way in the moment. It's really easy to sit here after selling a company and doing all these things to be like, you know, just hang in there. But I did that. I mean, we had so many moments in the beginning where, you know, everybody loves to brush over that 12 months of not making money. But every single day felt like, I'm going to client meeting after client meeting, pitch after pitch, and no one wants to be your first client. Nobody wants to be your first client because you don't have social proof, you don't have trust built, you don't have credibility. It's just, hey, trust me, I can do this thing. And it takes a special person. That's why I feel so loyal to the people that did give us our shot in the very beginning, the people when we weren't proven, when people did give us the opportunity. I'm always going to be indebted to those people, and I'm always going to try to be that person to other people, where they're trying new things and giving people shots, because I was given that shot. So, and that's why I like being an angel investor. So I would just say, you know, one more day, keep trying, because the number one reason that most entrepreneurs fail is they just give up too soon.
It is a roller coaster. It's a struggle. And that's what you signed up for. And I'm a huge fan of the Ed Milet Show, and he was saying that his, you know, now he's worth millions, but some of his best times in life was when he was struggling to pay the bills because everything was on the line. And it was just like the thrill of the pursuit and being on the hunt and like knowing that he was just going to like get rich or die trying. He said there's something really beautiful about that era of an entrepreneur when they don't have it yet.
No, it's absolutely true. You know, I would say that when we had, you know, caused some success and we were growing and doing the scaling thing, there was many moments where I was like, gosh, back in the day when we had 3 employees, 5 employees, remember how fun that was? You know, the challenge, the stress that came along with, you know, are you going to make it? You're not going to make it. In the moment, it's hard, but you look back and that's where the most learnings are. That's where you iron out the things that you really need to iron out to ensure that the thing you're selling, the thing you're doing is going to be successful. And so, you know, those days, they're tough. But I think that there is some truth in, you know, when we started Digital Hive, it wasn't as if I know that there's, you know, difference in opinion here, but I didn't go into it thinking, oh, well, this is, you know, if this doesn't work out, here's my next, you know, idea of what I'm going to do. It was, this has to work. There's no alternative. I will put every single moment of my life into this thing. And back then there was definitely no balance. It was all 100% work for many, many years because there was no other option. I wasn't going to go back and get a job. I wasn't going to go back and start a different, this had to work. And I think when you have that mindset, your mind creates opportunities and solutions to problems that otherwise, if you feel like you have it out, it won't do.
Amazing. So if you had a billboard on the side of the road and it said one sentence that summed up your life philosophy, what would it be?
Oh, a billboard. I would say that learn how to make the best choices with your time.
Mm.
It goes back to what we were saying. I feel like it's such an underrated thing. People take it for granted because it's so easy. Every single day you wake up and you wake up in the same bed, in the same circumstance that you were in yesterday for the most part. So it feels monotonous. But I have so much urgency, and every day I have so much urgency to appreciate and feel the beauty of living because I know it's so short. I don't know what or how or this got into me, but I know, like, my belief is we only have one shot at this life, and that you're going to live it and you're going to make choices with your time. And then before you know it, you're going to be hopefully 90, 95, 100 years old on your deathbed thinking, did I do it right? Did I make the right choices? Did I live the life I wanted to live? And the only way you can do that is in the micro choices that we make every single day of how we spend our time. So if you want to create a beautiful life, you have to learn, how should I be spending my time? What choices am I making that will further my goals of living the kind of life that I want to live? It's that simple, but it's extremely hard.
Beautiful. That is so beautiful. Yes, every day is a precious gift. And we're not promised tomorrow. And it's like, how do we want to spend our precious life? And we're just lucky to be here. You know, every day, 150,000 people don't wake up. So every day we get to wake up and be on the planet. We get to make the most of our lives and the most of our time. And what a beautiful way to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Jeff Canales, for all your wisdom and inspiration that you shared. I know my listeners are going to want to find you online. Where can people connect with you?
Jeff Canales on most social media platforms. You'll be able to find me at LinkedIn, Instagram, all those things. Right now, we're actually running a awesome contest with a mutual friend, I believe, Damon John from Shark Tank. We're doing a really cool $10,000 for any business owner, entrepreneur, trying to raise a little bit of money. We're giving away $10,000 and a chance to meet Damon John and ask him questions for your business. So that's at learnwithopin.com. So we're doing a little contest, which is really fun. DJ is the greatest guy. He's been really fun. I've partnered with him on a few different businesses. And we got a lot of stuff going on. So connect with me on any of the socials or through that contest. And I'm excited to connect with your listeners.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. Thanks to your loyal listening. We are the top 1% globally ranked podcast. Keep sharing the show. If you haven't subscribed and reviewed the show, it would really mean everything to me if you could do that. So people keep hearing this message that you can live life balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I hope you found great advice and actionable tips. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. And if you loved it, rate, review, and subscribe. We are so excited to watch you transform from burned out to blissed out as you continue with us on this transformation journey. Until next time, keep your vibe high and magnetize. Imagine looking back at the end of 2025 and saying the best decision I ever made in the entire year was going to the Mindset Manifestation Retreat in Playa del Carmen, Mexico with Rebecca. Not only will we set intentions, goals, and strategies for your new year, we will give you 21 customized affirmations, a vision board, a power word, a playlist, and every tool you need to get all seven pillars of your life to a level 10 and to crush your goals in 2025. In addition to all the goal setting and masterminding, you'll get to relax in a luxury spa, do yoga, and have a sound bath, all at a beautiful retreat in amazing Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And if you can't make it all the way to Mexico, which I know you want to do, and I can't wait to see you in Mexico, I'm having a little mini version of that on December 29th. It is a free training I do every year for my community called the New Year, New You Workshop, where you will get 21 customized affirmations to make sure that 2025 is your best year ever. Go to the show notes to learn more. I'll see you at the retreat.